you can easily set a block using the /set block command, but there's no easy way to just figure out which block is at a specific position. You have to use a binary search tree. It should be super easy to get the block at a position in a game all about blocks.
Yeah.
Hello, hello everyone. I'm Gears.
And I'm Mox Valix. And welcome to the Datapack Podcast, episode 11.
Episode 11. We kept going after episode 10, so there we go, I guess. So, today we are going to be talking about our Datapack wish list. This was sort of inspired by a question we got last episode, which was about if we could add some command to Minecraft, what command would we add? And we decided to expand on that because I'm sure between the two of us we have a lot of ideas for ways to improve Datapacks. And so yeah, we're talking about that this episode.
So before we started the podcast, we've both written down our wish list, and we don't actually know what's on each other's wish list. So this is going to be, it's going to be a bit of a surprise for each of us. I'm guessing we'll take it turn by turn. So do you want to start with the top of your wish list?
The first one on my list is advancement context. So what I mean by this is with the new enchantment system, and I think I've mentioned this before a couple of episodes ago, but basically if you have something like an enchantment which detects hitting a block, which gives you nice left click detection now, provided you're actually clicking on a block, you can essentially use a run function effect component. You can basically run a function as a result of that enchantment at the position that was clicked, which is very useful because, I mean, you can just immediately get the precise position instead of like ray casting and it's sort of imprecise and stuff like that. Now, I think it would be cool if you could do a similar thing with advancements, like, I don't know, when you have a player hurt entity advancement, you could then execute as an at that entity that was just hurt and do stuff like that instead of having to like do weird stuff with hurt time and figuring out like which is the entity, and you can't even 100% of the time get the correct entity because there are certain weird edge cases and stuff. So it'd be, I think, really cool if you could like execute as that entity or some other context.
I mean, even to expand on that, it would almost be cool for there to be a way to have an advancement-like system, but worked for all entities.
Yeah, so not just players could get an advancement. Yeah, I've sometimes thought about that too. It does somewhat limit, like, if you're trying to detect some interaction which is not related to a player, an entity attacking an entity, or an evoker turning a, what is it, blue sheep into red sheep, or the other way around.
One of those directions, yeah.
I'm not sure how easy it would be to detect that with Datapacks, but it would be cool if there was some, like, yeah, sort of more advanced event system. Potentially not even entity-based, right? You could have, like, a world event sort of type thing, which, you know, detects when the weather changes, for example, or detects when it's a certain time of day without having to attribute it to certain players.
That would be very, very useful, because right now a lot of things that aren't advancement based, you have to end up running it in a tick function and doing sometimes quite expensive checks, where theoretically with an event system you could have reactions to these events
done internally,
and it could theoretically make Datapacks just a little bit more performant, which would be obviously preferable.
Yeah, and even like, okay, I'll actually save this. I have another thought, but I'll save this for later. We can come back to that on my next turn. Do you want to go now?
Yeah, all right, I can go. So my wish list isn't really in any particular order, but the one at the top is, it's to do with NBT paths. And right now you can't, let's say you've indexed an array. So you've got an array of things, and let's say it's an array of objects, and you want the third item, so index 2, right? And then you want to check that object to see if it matches the condition. Now, how it's currently set up, you can't do that. You can't do curly braces right after square braces in NBT path. So to do that check, you end up having to store the result into a temporary storage and then perform the check if you need a fine-grained check. Now, obviously, you can do a quick check if it exists with just a dot something. But to check if it's a particular value, you have to store it and then do the check. You could save like a line of code, and it'll just be so much easier if they just allowed this syntax. And for whatever reason, it's just not allowed.
Yeah, it's so dumb. I don't understand why it wouldn't be allowed. It seems like it should be a bug, right? I mean, I don't see why. Have you opened a bug report on it? I feel like
it might be worth. We should check the bug tracker.
Or at least like looking for a bug report, yeah. But like I was doing some research on how MBT paths work the other day, and I was learning that actually there's tons of things you can do. Yeah, I don't know. Like there's a lot of weird syntaxes that's allowed. You're even allowed curly braces followed by square brackets, which makes no sense because you're basically checking that it's an object and then indexing it like an array, which is a logical impossibility. Mm. But you can't index array and then check if that's an object, which is so dumb.
And because like it could be an object, that's the thing. And so it's like it should work if it is, but it doesn't.
Yeah. Actually one thing I did find out that you could do, I think you can essentially do a list map do a little bit of mapping on a list, because basically when you access a list with like just the empty square brackets, that basically gets all of the items in a list, and you can continue to do MBT operations on that, and I'm pretty sure that does it element wise.
I haven't played
around with it completely, but I'm pretty sure if you have like an array or a list of compounds all with like a certain key, you can essentially use one data modify command to turn that into a list of compounds with a list of values where each value is just the value of that key in each of the elements. I think that's valid, which is pretty cool.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I'll have to
do some more testing.
That seems fun to explore, yeah.
But yeah, that's a cool thing I learnt.
Because I knew you could use that like that to, I believe, quickly append all of the items from that array into another array.
Yeah, exactly. You can you can add all the items from an array into the other.
Mm.
And you can do a few cool things with that, but it's somewhat limited because, I need to play around with that a bit more.
Yeah,
and figure out. But yeah, it's stupid that you can't do square brackets followed by curly braces. Like, you can do multiple square brackets in a row. That's allowed. Anyway.
As soon as you get the curly brace, not disallowed. No.
I guess we'll look into, see if there's already a bug report open, and if not, we can create one after we finish recording this.
I'll be surprised if no one's ever pointed that out before, because that one seems fairly obvious. Then.
We probably looked before when we were annoyed about it a while ago.
Yeah, we've been annoyed by that one plenty of times at this point.
basically the whole time we've been working on Code of Copper, right from the beginning it was like, yeah, why can't you do this? Because that's the sort of thing you do a lot in Code of Copper. You gotta like index an array and check object values and stuff.
Yeah, because we're working with a stack, so we're always, like, checking the last item of the...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we always do stack at -1, and then check if it's something.
Mm.
Yeah, which is super annoying.
I mean, it's one of the reasons why we tended to have everything in a wrapper object with a value field, because it just made it a lot easier to check that. I mean, that allows us to mix types as well.
Yeah, that's mostly for mixed types, isn't it?
No, but we did refactor a few arrays to do that just to have that support.
Just so we can have that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So actually, that's a little data pack tip. If you ever running into this annoying thing, just wrap it in an object and you just have a value field, you know.
That's basically the solution to all Minecraft MBT limitations. Just wrap it in a compound.
Yeah. Solves everything.
What can't have mixed lists? Wrap it in a compound.
Exactly.
It's not mixed anymore.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right. So do we want to move on to your next one?
Yeah. Okay. So my next one is somewhat related to my last one. Again, these are not really in any order. They're just sort of the order that things came to mind. Basically, right now we have tick.json and load.json, right?
Yep.
Those two are special function tags, which essentially control, you know, load.json gets run on world load and slash reload, and then tick.json gets run on every tick, obviously.
Yep.
And Minecraft has this quite a lot. It's got quite a few tags of different kinds, right? You've got entity tags and block tags and item tags, which define a certain behavior. So, for example, I'm pretty sure there's one for climbable blocks, so you can just make any block climbable, theoretically.
Yep.
Or remove blocks from that list. And there's all sorts of things. Like, there's a block tags control which tools are needed to mine which blocks. And also, you can define, say, this block needs an axe or a pickaxe. And it also defines, like, what's the minimum tool strength needed to do it. So you can say, oh, yeah, this needs a stone pickaxe to mine this or something. And so there's a lot of stuff like that in the game, which I really like. I like the fact that that's sort of dynamic and data-driven, and you can easily modify that with data packs. But it only has tick and load.json for functions, right? It would be cool if there was more than that. I don't know exactly how that would work, but they could have, like, for example, if they didn't want to create a whole new JSON file type for an event system, just add, like, some more useful function tags potentially.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what
what
there would be, but yeah.
A common one I find is I usually end up making a player function that then runs all my player specific stuff. It's just in tick, it runs as an A, or it runs from a tick advancement, depending on how I've set it up. So that could be a cool one that just automatically runs as every player.
Also, like, something which I've found I've needed to do quite a few times is run a function as every player once the first time they join. So, like, having some sort of function tag for that.
Yeah, first join useful. Or something, yeah. That would be really good.
Yeah. I don't know exactly how that would work, because, yeah, I mean, then sort of Mojang kind of have to decide which tags makes, like, which function tags make sense. And you can't really have, like, I feel like an event system would probably just be better in general, because, for example, you can add way more things to an event system. Like, you can, if you have some sort of event file type, right, you get, like, all the things you can do with advancements. Like, you add specific MBT checks on certain things, or you add a predicate in which does some other check to see if something, and, you know, you add all these layers of different, tying all the different systems in to be used. Whereas a function tag, you basically just got to hard code one use for it, and then either you use it and do the check in the function, or you use some other system. So yeah, probably an event system is just better.
Wouldn't say no to anyway. More function tags.
Yeah.
Because if anything,
it would be a much easier to implement than an event system.
Yeah.
For sure.
I mean, because with an event system as well, you got to implement it in a performant way, and that could get interesting.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like, predicates can even get fairly unperformant sometimes. If you're doing a lot of MBT checks and stuff, they're usually more performant than selectors as a rule of thumb, but they can be not that performant. And if, like, if that's tied into, I guess advancements always do a predicate check. I know it's interesting to see how they would do that, but that's up to Mojang to figure out. So, yeah.
That's a them problem.
That's a them problem.
That's okay. Right. Do you want to give your next one?
Okay, my next one, and this is one I've actually opened a feature request for on the Minecraft feedback website, and that is custom selectors. Now, right, okay, so in data packs, you've got at S, right? And this is a selector for the executing entity, and this is really useful because, firstly, it already knows this entity. It's, like, cached it, so it's quite efficient to just quickly access. And, well, like, so you can... It's fairly, like, it's pretty much free to use at S, right? Whereas as soon as you're using at E, at A, any of the other selectors, they have to search for entities, right? And they don't actually remember any. And so they can become much less performant. And so there is a bit of a workaround. So if you're working with two entities, obviously it can get tricky because you want to be able to select both of the entities in one command, maybe, right? And so you've got at S... but you also got to be selecting the other entity, and that gets tricky. And so some workarounds is you can make the entity ride the other one and then execute on vehicle, execute on passengers can kind of be a little bit more efficient than doing a general selector. But even then, that's quite janky and hard to work with. So my wish list would be for... a way to assign a selector. So basically it runs the selector, like when it assigns, it runs the selector and selects the entity, and then it caches it to a selector with a number. So let's say you did, I'm just going to pitch, for example, a /selector command. And so you could do /selector, and then you write the selector and then assign it to a number. So 1, 2, 3, whatever, right? And so let's say it was...
Or even a name.
A name. Yeah, maybe could assign it to a name, yeah, I guess. And then you could access that entity going forward with at one or at whatever name, whatever you've given it, right? So it would be a way to cache an entity into a selector, and then you would be able to cheaply access that entity. Which would be really useful.
I think that would be really nice. Because at the moment, you basically just have to tag the entity. Mm. Just do like at E tag equals that and then limit equals one.
Yeah. And tags are not very performant, unfortunately.
Which is not super performant.
Yeah. So, yeah. All right. That's probably it for that one. So if you want to do your one.
Yeah. Okay. So... Okay, here's one which I thought of, which could be kind of useful in certain cases, right? So, okay, basically, a while ago, when we were working on Moxlib and Code of Copper and regex and stuff, and we were juggling all these dependencies, and there were lots of dependencies, basically, which, we had to make sure that each dependency was there, because if it wasn't, then the whole pack would break, basically.
Mm.
And so what I did is I wrote in a little verify function to Moxlib, which basically just, like, I forget exactly what it basically just returned true. And then essentially in Code of Copper, all you got to do is call that verify function, and if it doesn't return true, that means that basically the pack isn't installed, and so you can, like, report an error to the user.
Mm.
But the problem is you can't guarantee load order for data packs, at least not by default. So basically, if Code of Copper loaded before Moxlib, then I'm pretty sure calling Moxlib verify wouldn't work because Moxlib hadn't loaded yet.
Yeah.
And so there is a trick you can do, which I've never actually done before, but where you can essentially disable or like you can the slash datapack command can be has only a function has only a permission level of 2, which means you can use it in datapacks. And so basically you can do a trick where you like enable the datapack, but then there's a certain flag in the certain option in the datapack slash datapack command to like load after a certain thing. But that's kind of weird because you've got to like it's the datapack's got to like enable itself. And if I'm not mistaken, you select datapacks by their file name.
Yeah.
Because there's not really any other way to select them, which means that if they renamed the file to anything other than, you know, what you called it or what you expect it to be, the whole thing doesn't work. Yeah, that's kind of a little bit janky and not very reliable. And so it would be cool to like define a load order in pack.mcmeta, for example. Say like this datapack needs to load after Moxlib, and then just make sure that Moxlib loads first. Now, I don't know how that would work, how you'd reference another datapack without using the file name. There would have to be some extra way to do that, I think.
Yeah, well, maybe the datapack, like, maybe the pack.mcmeta can have an ID field.
That's what I was thinking, some sort of ID like that, yeah.
Yeah, that represents the datapack, because, like, oftentimes you think of the namespace of the datapack being the ID, but it's not, because oftentimes datapacks will have, like, a couple namespaces, depending on what they're doing.
Yeah, some of them need to, like, hook into other things, like, for example, Moxlib has various function tags which get run as, like, a callback for something. And so for example, Code of Copper or Golem Script or regex, they all use unit tests, and Moxlib has a function tag for everything to run when you run the unit testing module. And so they all have a Moxlib namespace to extend that function tag. So yeah, that basically wouldn't work because they already have the Moxlib namespace in them. And then you could potentially, I don't know how this would work really, but theoretically you could define load order per namespace. I don't know if that makes any sense at all in terms of instead of per data pack, it's per namespace.
Namespace is relying on code and other namespaces in the pack. Yeah, that's. I think just having an ID field, honestly, would be better.
Yeah.
I think that.
So, also, I'm not sure exactly how the load order thing works. It might be that you're allowed to call Moxlib verify, but certain things might not be there. If, for example, because I think basically it might be that Moxlib verify already exists and you can call it, but the load function hasn't run yet, and so there were certain things in the load function which were required to do the verify thing. Like, for example, in the load function, it sets the Moxlib version in the data storage. And if you run verify and then you, like, expect the data storage to be there, then, then it won't be. But anyway,
I think we could fix that by having verify run the load function.
All the thing, right? That's what I was thinking. So yeah, maybe it's not so much of a problem. But yeah, I think it could be useful to define
also like
stuff like that in pack.mcmeta.
If the pack.mcmeta had an ID field, you could theoretically have datapack built-in dependency support.
Right.
That and Minecraft just say, like, itself,
if this thing isn't here,
it sends an error
to load.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could be quite good.
Yeah, that would be cool as well. All right, do you want to go next?
Yeah. So this is another one. We've definitely talked about this one in the past, but a custom item registry. So a way to register custom items in the game and theoretically assign them their default components and everything. And just so that the item, like, kind of rather than having to use a blank slate item in Minecraft that isn't tied to anything. Something that could, like, you know, if we could define our own, then it's not, like, it's guaranteed it's not in any crafting recipes we don't want. It's not in any, it doesn't have any weird interactions that somehow aren't part of the component system yet. Like, using items for custom items in Minecraft comes with a lot of side effects, and it's hard to find an item that doesn't have a weird side effect to it.
Except like a command block, maybe.
Yeah.
That's the one I use sometimes, often, in fact.
Yeah.
If I want to do something like that. That's on my list as well. And I think the plan, because it definitely seems like Mojang's moving towards this. But I think what they don't want to do is have, like, partially data-driven items, where something like food, right, that's data-driven. You can create a food component, but something like a bow, that's still hard-coded. So I think from what various Mojang developers have said, or actually just King B Dogs, what from stuff that I've seen him say, basically, you can't fully data-drive items without data-driving every item, right? So I guess you could create a way to register a custom item with only the existing components and just have most existing items hard-coded.
That's the way I would assume that you do it.
Yeah, but I think what their plan is that they're going to essentially just make that when they can just have every item be data-driven and just have every item be defined by a JSON file.
Right, right.
That seems to be the direction they're taking with that.
So there'll probably be like a bow component at some point that would define the functionality of bows. And like, yeah, another big one would be a component that sets what block gets placed.
For sure. That, I feel like, I don't know why they haven't added that yet, really, because I don't know, it feels like something which should be pretty straightforward to add, but there's probably a reason for it.
It's probably because there's like, there is probably a big refactor of the code for whatever reason, because assumes something from ages ago. Who knows?
And I don't know if there's certain, you might want to, they might want to figure out, because like certain blocks can only be placed in certain conditions. So I don't know if they need to like make sure that the block is only placed in the certain conditions in which it can exist. Like, you can't place a cactus next to a block, or you can't place a mushroom in full daylight or something, you know? So yeah, that could be part of it as well. But I think that would be a really good component. But yeah, so I think they're definitely moving towards fully data-driven items, but I don't think they're going to make data-driven items until they can make every item data-driven.
Oh, and something, if somehow any Mojang employees are listening, make sure when you have, finally do have data-driven items, that you can set a fullback texture so that you can make it look like an existing item. Because that's something I personally find really important, is that if the resource pack, for whatever reason, isn't there, that the items still look good in your, like, inventory. And you want to be able to pick a vanilla item to represent it.
Yeah, like the fullback translation, right? They added that a while ago where, if you don't have a, you can define a fullback translation, so even if you don't have the resource pack, it doesn't just look like item.codeofcopper.golem or something. It actually looks like the thing.
It's really good change,
like,
honestly.
Like the English version or whatever. And actually, another thing related to this, I guess this can be my, it'd be cool to have a way to define, like, a custom model or custom model for an item without using a resource pack that is just referencing a resource location directly. So you could, like, for example, you could make an item which looks like another existing vanilla item without requiring a resource pack for it. So you have, like, so you have like some sort of custom model, which, you know, you point to like the stick model, for example, and it just picks that rather than having to like use custom model data and having to have a resource patch to overwrite that.
Yeah.
That could be cool as well.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
For example, like the copper golem is a sheep spawn egg because it's got to be some sort of spawn egg pretty much because of how you place it down. But a sheep spawn egg doesn't really look very good like as the texture if you don't have the resource pack. And so it would be cool if we could have like in the model which displays the golem inside the minecart is a totem of undying, because even if you don't have the resource pack on, you can sort of see that it's a golem still. Yeah, it would be cool if we could like make it look like a totem of undying if you don't have the resource pack. And then if it does, then it's overwritten by custom model data.
Yeah, having a model component would be really good. Definitely. It's also, I think we don't have a spawn egg component yet, do we? Like, we can't make an item spawn an entity?
You have the entity data component, which controls what entity the egg spawns. But as far as I know, you can't define any item as a spawn egg. Mm. It would just have to be an existing spawn egg.
Right. Yeah, because that would be a good thing, like, just make a totem of undying perform the spawn egg functionality is another way of doing that. And, like, yeah, I guess there's a bunch of components we're missing, I guess, which would be good to have at some point. It seems like they're working on it. I guess some systems are probably harder to componentize than others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the functionality of a crossbow, let's say, is pretty complicated. Yeah, it'll probably be a while till we get something like that data-driven.
I mean, personally, I'd rather they gave us custom items and then we're just like, some of these are just hard-coded to these particular items.
Yeah, or do like sort of what they did. For example, when they initially added custom recipes, there are some recipes which have like special functionality which you can't really create with just recipes because they detect components from the input items, or they added MBT to the output because, yeah, you couldn't do that back then. And so what they did is they added a bunch of special recipe types. They were like crafting special firework rockets, and that just basically uses hard-coded Java logic to like create a firework from all the different things, because obviously you can have a recipe for each possible firework combination, because it's an insane number of combinations. And stuff like suspicious stew originally, although now they've in the latest snapshot they've made that data driven because you can do components in the output now. But a lot of those things are just still recipe special. They could just do that for some of the components. Like, they just have a Minecraft crossbow component and then just say, yeah, crossbow is its own component for now until we figure out a better way to do it. And then just, yeah, it would be nice to get data-driven items as soon as possible, really.
Yeah. Oh, and one more thing I'll just quickly add as well. Obviously, components / NBT and the input. It's weird we don't have that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That would be really nice to have.
Yeah, I feel like it's quite weird that we don't have, like, we've got NBT output, but we don't have NBT input. And
Which means before we have fully custom data-driven items with their own IDs, you can't really use a custom item in a recipe because you can't detect the components of it. So you can either just, you could use something like a command block and just detect any command block, but that can cause weird things with other data packs and stuff. So that's kind of annoying.
And another thing is like a way to be able to say, no, this item can't be used in this recipe because we've made it custom. Like,
right. Yeah. That's also good too.
Yeah.
Because, if you use an item as a base for your custom item, which already has a crafting recipe it's part of, then it will just still be used in that crafting recipe, so you got to be careful with that.
All right, do we want to move on to your one?
Yeah, okay, so my next one, the next few are all taken from feedback posts I've opened on the Minecraft feedback website. at various times when I just inspiration struck me, I guess. And so the first one is a better way to get the position of a block you're targeting. So currently, if you're trying to get the block that a player is looking at, you more or less just have to do a ray cast and just hope for the best, because there's only so much precision you can have, and if they're looking at the corner of a block, then you might accidentally ray cast straight through it, and there's all sorts of room for imprecisions. And ray casting is also hard because it's hard to detect stuff like stairs and slabs and doors, which all have like a partial hitbox. So if you're looking at part of them, you're looking at that block, but if you're looking at the other part, then you're looking through that block. And I know you came up with that idea, which I think you talked about, where you essentially use an interaction entity and like progressively move it back until you can't see it anymore, and then that detects like the stair blocks and stuff. It's not a great solution, and it's probably not very good in terms of performance. So it'd be really good if there was just like execute positioned target, for example, right? And it just executes at the block that the current entity is looking at. I don't know how that would work for non-player entities, because those are obviously, I don't know how those are calculated, but at least for players, it would be nice to have a way to just detect the block you're looking at in one command.
Definitely.
Okay. Do you want to go?
Yeah. So my next one on the list is easier floating point operations. Now.
Oh, yeah.
All of our math has to be in data packs is done with the exception of scale on the data command and execute store. All other like math that you do is done using scoreboards. And for the most part, this is fine for integer math. That's fine. But it gets tricky when you want to do math on floating point numbers, right? So floats or doubles. You have to basically scale them up and scale them back down and do operations
on the scoreboard. Yeah, you basically got to choose your fixed precision amount and say, I just want 2 digits of precision or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating because you lose precision, and it's also like you got to do a bunch of commands, you got to scale it up, you got to then move it to the scoreboard, do the stuff, scale it back down, moving it back to storage. And it's just, it would be nice if we had some commands that could perform math operations on storage. Yeah. And so rather than having to directly move it into scoreboard, and that would work with floats and just be a little bit easier, like, overall to work with. So
yeah, that would be so nice.
Yeah, that would be quite a good change, in my opinion.
I don't know how it would work if you try to do that operation on, like, because obviously the nice thing about scoreboards is that the only values you can have there is integers. Mm. But with a storage, like, what happens when you try and add an integer to a float? I mean, I'd be inclined to say it just turns into a float. But there would need to be some rules defined about that. What happens when you try and add an integer to a compound? Like, would it do, like, the size operation, probably?
Yeah.
Or it would fail. Maybe it should just fail.
Probably honestly. Should fail.
Yeah. But I think that would be nice. You technically can, using scale and macros, you can technically perform multiplication and division on floating point numbers without losing precision. not great. And also addition and subtraction, which are generally the more useful operations or more commonly used operations.
Yeah.
You'll lose precision for that. So
just annoying.
So yeah. This one's kind of related to my last one, which is something which we've run into many times. And that is an easier way to get the block at a position. Because you can easily set a block using the slash set block command, but you can't there's no easy way to just figure out which block is at a specific position. You have to use a binary search tree, which luckily Moxlib implements one, so if I ever need that, I just add Moxlib as a dependency and call it there. But like, it should be super easy to get the block at a position in a game all about blocks.
Yeah.
I wish there was a way to do that.
I'm a little bit peeved because I had this one on my list as well, so you beat me to it.
Yeah, well, you beat me to the data-driven items one, so call it even.
Let's go. Yeah, it is crazy that we can't get the ID of the block in any performant way from, like, a command. It's like, you can check if the block's there. We can check the block, but we can't just blindly see what the block is.
That was one issue macros didn't solve.
That was one issue they didn't solve, and the only reason to install Moxlib anymore, even though its binary search tree is not up to date with the latest version. Bunch of blocks are missing.
Yeah, so just don't try and run it. Don't try and get the block of a tough bricks or something, because it won't work.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's
annoying.
Yeah, I wish there was just like a, we have /set block. Why not just add /get block, you know? Yeah.
Well, I mean, the question is, how does it return the value? I think is really the...
Oh, right.
The trick. Yeah. And it's got to be like, get block, position, and then probably the storage. And then it would have to write to the storage. And that would probably be the first command that writes to a storage.
Like, yeah, there's no... Unless we have, like, some way to... Like, we have data get block, but that only works for block entities. I wonder if we could make it, like, so that there's technically an ID field on every block, even though it's not actually stored.
Mm.
It, like, technically exists, and you can data get it.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah. I mean, another thing, just a mini little feature, I guess, would be, related thing, just because we were talking about return, is having a way to return any NBT rather than integer. Because then that would theoretically fix that. If we could, rather than having to do execute store, if execute store could work with other kinds of NBT, and then a function or command could return NBT, then it would kind of be like, you know, get block returns either a compound with some data in it or a string, whatever it returns. And then you would just be able to store that straight into a storage to be used, which would be, that would be nice. Yeah,
I mean, returns of arbitrary NBT values is something I've always wanted. And it's something we've implemented directly into Zoglin because it's very useful. I guess you'll go next.
All right. So my next one is mixed type arrays, a way to store different types of things in an array. That would come with two features, basically. Obviously, firstly, the array allowing mixed types. Yep. But then a way to get the type of an NBT. Because you kind of need that if you've got, once you've got mixed type arrays, you can't assume the type of an. And a way to just check the type of NBT without having to do a bunch of convoluted, like, you know, without having to put it in an array and check it. Well, I mean, that's how you currently do it, but once they're mixed type, you can't do that anymore. So an explicit way to check the type of an NBT field would be good.
I think making regular NBT lists mixed type would be a pretty massive change. So I feel like it would be better to have regular lists still be single type and then add a separate mixed type array, sort of like we're doing in Zoglin.
In Zoglin, we've got, because there's like I semicolon to do integer lists, B semicolon for byte lists, etc. We've done a star semicolon in Zoglin to mean mixed type.
Yeah, which, and internally we're just representing that as compounds with a single key of like a dot value, and then... Yeah, and then doing that.
We call it the Golem script approach.
Yay. Okay, so this is still continuing from a set of feedback posts I I opened a while ago. Execute subcommand. Now, I'm not sure exactly how useful this is, really. It doesn't really add a new way to do something, but it could be nice. An execute subcommand continue, which basically continues the current function in the execute context. So one thing you might want to do is, like, in a function, you do a bunch of commands, and then you want to change context and do a bunch more commands. And the way you do that currently is you basically have to have, like, a separate function for that. You do execute, and then you change your context, and then you do run function that. But it would be kind of cool if you could do, like, just execute, blah, 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 continue, and then that basically just sets the context for the rest of... for the rest of the function. Another thing which kind of happens sometimes is that if you teleport the executing entity during the function you're doing, right, and you're relying on the position of that entity, the position isn't tied to that entity, it's just set to the position of that entity when you run the function initially. So if you teleport the entity, you're no longer in the same position as them, and you basically have to, for every command after that, you basically have to do execute at s, or like run a function to do the rest of them. But if you could just do like teleport the entity and then execute at s continue, then everything else has the updated position, which I think could be kind of nice.
I'm gonna add something to that, and it probably they wouldn't add it because it'd be too complicated, but something like execute blah 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 context push and context pop. So like you could push the context, and then subsequent commands like, are in that context.
Have a stack of context.
Yeah, and then you could pop the context to go back. So it's almost like a block.
Yeah.
It's a block without block syntax. That could be really cool.
Yeah, that doesn't really feel like Minecraft-y, though, so...
It would be, and I feel like it would be too complicated for regular Datapack users to use.
Yeah, I think so. I don't think that's...
It would be cool. It would be cool. You know, give the technical data packers a bone.
Okay, do you want to go
then? Yeah, so I'll go. This is the last one. We're going to be wrapping up now. So the last one for this episode is insert an item into a non-block inventory. So, I can't remember, is it the item command or the loot command that has an insert?
Loot command. Loot insert, yeah.
Right. And so, what that does is it actually puts it into the inventory in, like, the same way, you know, if you shift-clicked, shift-clicked into the chest, right? And so it adds it to whatever the stack is available, or if there's no stacks, it creates a new stack in the inventory, right? And obviously fails if the inventory is full. But for any other inventory other than specifically using a loot table and a storage block, that's hard to do. And there's a whole lot of code in Moxlib just to perform that functionality.
Yeah, because I remember for the place function in Code of Copper, when the golem breaks the block, it needs to insert that block into its inventory. And you can't use loot insert because the golem is an entity, right? It's a chest minecart. And so in original versions, I just basically placed a chest in the Moxlib, what's it called? Moxlib state dimension. Just placed a chest and then did a loot insert in there. But also it was kind of weird because you can't do loot insert across dimensions. That's another one, actually. I wish there was a better way to, like, do operations across dimensions. Because, actually, it initially wasn't possible to clone a block across dimensions, but luckily, in 23W03A, insert angel singing noise here, you know the one I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
They added clone from, so you can basically execute a dimension, clone from another dimension. But a lot of stuff, you can't really do a lot of operations interdimensionally, so I had to basically clone the block into the Moxlib state, and then set a chest there, loot insert it and then copy it from the chest into the entity. Well, actually, I had to copy the entity's items into the chest, then loot insert, then copy them back. And yeah. And then in later versions, we got rid of the Moxlib state dependency or Moxlib experimental dependency. And so we basically, we wrote our own insert in Moxlib. Yeah, it's quite complex.
Yeah.
But it would be really nice to, be able to do that into an entity's inventory. And also to be able to do that without using slash loot, like slash item insert would be really nice. Having slash item insert entity or item insert block, the item command by default supports both entities and blocks. It'd be really useful to have that as well.
Yeah, definitely. It's honestly, it's kind of weird that this is just another one that's just, it's weird we don't have this functionality, because a big part of the game is inserting items in inventories, and it's just it's really hard to do. Like, I would argue it's probably one of the more complicated functions in Moxlib, just because of the amount of weird edge cases that it's handling. I mean, we always have the joke as well that Codacopper place just always breaks. Move and place.
Yeah, and it's so hard. It's always the tool aspect of it, or almost always the tool aspect of it, because that requires all sorts of things.
So the way it detects if it's got a tool, it does this weird, I think we got a weird inventory filter thing going.
No, well,
or do we replace
it? Just
that?
Does a string filter on the ID.
Yeah, that's what I'm. Yeah, but it
you can't use item tags. Because it basically, we don't know where the slot is that the golem's going to be using, and so we can't use. I guess we could have used a macro with an item tag, but anyway, we do a string filter on the ID. But yeah, I think we still got quite a few things left, so we've been going for quite a while now. So I think we will wrap up this episode and we'll make it into a two-part show.
Yep.
And I guess we will, we'll end it here, and we'll see you in the next episode.